Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 8th, 2017. Today, our good friend D.R. Tucker is busy, but we're happy to be joined by Mariah Tinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
That's great. So this past week, while I was sitting on the beach looking at the tide roll in, the appeals court, a U.S. appeals court down in Washington, D.C., was very busy. So on Monday, July 3rd, they issued a ruling. And let me just kind of set this up a little bit. During the last portion of the Obama administration, Mr. Obama was trying to build his reputation and burnish his legacy by implementing rules to address climate change. One of those many rules was a rule that said new fracking wells, of course we all know what fracking is, right? Fracking wells could not leak very much natural gas into the air at the well site, right? There was a rule, they had to measure it, they had to cut down on how much natural gas leaked at the place where the natural gas was being fracked. They went through a long process of making scientific findings about this, and they issued a rule sometime late last year, just about the time that our friend, the fraudulent McBurglar, what are the guy, somebody call our new president the McBurglar, but he was, the Obama administration issued these rules, and then the Trump administration came in and appointed a guy named Scott Pruitt. And Mr. Scott Pruitt, who was appointed to the EPA, just decided of his own accord to postpone the enforcement of this methane leak rule. And there you go. So I don't know, Mariah, if you heard much about that or if there was anything in the news that you caught. Oh, you're watching the tide, too.
Yes, watching the tide for sure. I haven't heard too much about it, but I am curious, on what grounds was Pruitt able to just sort of say, oh yeah, it's okay to let these fracking wells leak, we can repeal these?
I think that he did it on his own say-so as head of the EPA. I guess he, as an executive officer, I guess he felt that he had some authority to decide what he would and would not enforce. And in fact, I read somewhere, of course I don't have the legal mind I need, but somehow he decided at the same time that the courts had no authority to restrict him from not enforcing the EPA rules. Basically, so, you know, U.S. attorneys have a lot of prosecutorial discretion, right? And who they're going to go after. And in fact, the prosecutorial discretion was used by Obama to not target certain classes of undocumented immigrants, right? You choose who you go after. I think Pruitt was arguing the same thing, that he could decide not to enforce these methane rules. But lo and behold, Mr. Pruitt was taken to court, I think by the Conservation Law Foundation or the Environmental Defense Fund, I think it was, took him to court. And finally, last Monday at the appeals court level down in D.C., they rejected Mr. Pruitt's contention that he could not enforce these methane rules. And basically, the court told the EPA that it must enforce those rules.
That's great.
Well, it's good in many ways, because the Trump administration has been trying to simply, by fiat, decide that they're not going to enforce something. It's happened now in several different cabinet, departments, right? I think Ms. DeVos, who's the head of the education department, just decided she's not going to enforce rules about private colleges and whatnot. Long and short of it, it's good news for environmentalists, because it absolutely makes very clear that if the EPA is going to try to reverse rules being the regulation around emissions and stuff, they have to collect the appropriate science and put the science up against the old science and prove that the new rules are legitimate and not just walking away from the previously established science. So it's a good deal. It's a good deal for climate hawks. And it's something that you probably would have missed, but it's there and it will have fairly wide implications. So that's a good thing.
Right, definitely. I mean, you know, it's amazing to me that they can even sort of get close to pulling, sort of covering up, you know, sort of saying, oh yeah, we're not going to enforce this rule, when I would think that there must be pretty good data about that leaks from fracking wells are dangerous for human health. So I'm glad that they're saying you need to sort of prove that this is something that can go forward. And I assume they're saying that maybe they're saying it's not, fracking wells are not dangerous.
I think they're just saying that it's too expensive and the companies have not had time to install the necessary equipment, which of course is an argument that you hear a lot, right? I mean, that's what you hear all the time from the industry. It's like, it's too expensive, takes too much time, we don't have it ready yet, can't do it. So there's that. And then the other, so one of the interesting things is that the EPA is at the same time they've done this methane rule, there's another rule that the EPA is trying to basically avoid, and that is called the Waters of the United States rule. There is so in the United States, there's the Clean Water Act, which was passed in the 1970s. And the Clean Water Act gives control of the navigable bodies of water in the U.S. to the federal government. So the Mississippi River, Hudson River, those are things that are all run by the federal government, which is where the EPA and the Corps of Engineers gets in. But very quickly, it becomes apparent that if you want to talk about the Mississippi River, then you have to talk about the tributaries that are contributing to the Mississippi River. So the Clean Water Act was extended to include all of the tributaries of, say, the Mississippi River. And then you wonder what's contributing to the tributary rivers. And the more you think about it, almost all the water in the United States is connected through some sort of subterranean aquifer or various kinds of channels, and there are rivers that only run in the springtime and not in the fall, stuff like that. But those are all part of the water system. And so, during the Obama administration, they promulgated rules about something called the Waters of the United States, a WOTS. It's kind of like POTUS, but it's WOTUS. And it defines the waters of the United States rather broadly to include, for example, streams that do not run all year long, but are only run in the springtime, which exist, actually. They're fairly common out west. And, of course, the EPA now is trying to slow walk that waters of the United States rule, roll it back. And this new ruling we just talked about that had to do with the methane leaks, I think, would apply directly to the waters of the United States effort, and they meaning that the EPA must make new rules and take the time and get the science and have the public discussion if they want to change this waters of the U.S. Regulation. So.
Wow. I don't know the details totally about this, but I'm pretty sure that Ducks Unlimited has been sort of, you know, getting on board with this waters of the United States and how important it is to protect them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's always great to have their support.
Right. Well, someone was saying, if you drink water or you take a shower once in a while, the waters of the United States are important to you. So having clean water is a good thing.
Yeah, it's one of those commons that we all use that should be protected.
But then there's then you go one step further. A couple of weeks ago, we heard from Rick Perry, who was the guy who didn't remember that he wanted to eliminate the Department of Energy, but then found out he was going to be in charge of the Department of Energy, right? He's the new Secretary of Energy, following in the footsteps of Ernie Moniz, Massachusetts' own Ernie Moniz. Anyway, Rick Perry is in charge of the Department of Energy, which does have responsibility for developing renewable energy technologies. And a few weeks ago, you may have remembered that Al Franken was chastising Rick Perry, Al Franken being the senator from Minnesota, chastising Rick Perry about being not believing in climate science. And Rick Perry said that he thought there ought to be a red team, blue team argument within the Department of Energy to talk about climate science. Did you have any chance, Mariah, to see any of that?
Put it to Rick Perry in really great words about, you know, I think he even said, your team has already said that climate change exists. Kind of used their own data against them.
Well, and I think that what's coming is, I recently saw a thing where Mr. Pruitt at the EPA wants to have a similar red team, blue team debate, right, over is climate science real, and trade this information back and forth. And it seems to me that the concept of a red team, now what's red team, blue team? Red team, blue team, I think, comes from the U.S. military, where they have two groups of people basically having a debate. There's some thesis that's put in front of them. One, the red team defends it, the blue team attacks it, or vice versa. And they try and get all the information out and have all the arguments laid out, and then they summarize it, right? Seems, in principle, like a great thing to do.
And the red team, blue team, in this case, is not referring to political red and blue, right?
Right.
It's just
right.
this just sort different. Of idea of the red team and blue team.
Right. It could be the square team and the round team, right? It could be any other designation, yeah. But I guess the question comes as to why the EPA would want to engage in something like this kind of public debate about climate, given the fact that the whole EPA, the scientific method of the EPA over the last 50 years has already been a critique and discussion. I think that's the message of the Franken tape clip was basically that this red team, blue team idea is the scientific method, right? Where somebody puts up an idea and everybody shoots at it and tries to find the error in it. And what finally stands out is good science, right? Question is, why would the EPA want to do that? And this article that I saw, I think it was in the New York Times, said basically the EPA wants to further confuse the issue by having sort of a legitimate, proposing this legitimate debate between what appears to be two equal sides thrashing out these ideas, when anyone who studied it knows that the preponderance of scientists believe that climate change is real and you don't need this red team, blue team, but they're basically throwing out confusing facts, Mariah, much like you were saying last week with Naomi Orestes, right? Talking about just confusing the issue with raising doubts in people's minds. I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think for a long time, a lot of scientists basically said they refused to debate about the climate science because it was such an established science and had been so well peer reviewed. I mean, all of the papers that, you know, the 99% of agreement on climate change as being something that's happening and being caused by humans comes from peer-reviewed science, where they've had scientific, this sort of red team, blue team in a very scientific forum. And it's already, all of the science has already been proved. It's solid data. And a lot of climate scientists for a very long time just refused to even engage in any sort of a debate. They just kept saying, we don't need to debate. There's nothing to debate. This is data. And, you know, I some part of me agrees, obviously, 100% with that. And then some part of me wonders, would we be in this position we are in now if those scientists did get up and very vocally said, no, there are data and we're going to present them all to you. There's no debate here. And here it is. You can try and debate it. But when we go head to head, we're going to win. Maybe that would have... I don't know if it would have caused confusion or cleared it up. It's hard to say.
It's hard to say because I saw, so there was just something somewhere, I think it was again the New York Times, by a climate scientist who said he was not going to participate in the trickle-down knowledge thing. I don't know if you saw that, but it's basically this climate scientist said he was going to fight back. But I think, for my part, I think you have to be very careful in somehow blaming or saying, gee, if climate scientists had spoken out more forcefully. I think the problem is that the politicians, the people who make policy didn't pick up the facts that the scientists were we're providing, right? The scientist commits himself to just, you know, only the facts, ma'am, right? So he's not going to try and he or she's not going to try and push that. The policy is the people who failed here are the policymakers and the politicians who refuse to accept the facts as they were being laid out, the scientific facts. And so maybe now we have the March for Science, we have all the, you know, we have more scientists speaking out. But I know you're not blaming scientists, but it's important to keep in mind that the failure has been on the part of politics. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. And I, you know, I think so scientists are very careful when they, you know, when they are presenting the data, they do say we are 99% certain, right? And that's just part of the sort of the scientific method. You don't say you're 100% certain about anything, especially if it's a future prediction, because that, you know, we have statistical methods and nothing's 100% certain. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that carefulness in scientific presentations was what people jumped on. And I think you're right. I mean, the scientists had their reputation. It's certainly, I definitely don't think, you know, they're to blame in any way, shape, or form. These scientists have been so dedicated for decades and being attacked and so on and so forth.
But I think it's good for scientists to speak out. They do have authenticity. They do have legitimacy. And it, I think it's one of the places that people still respect. I mean, someone may not know a person personally, but if they say they're a scientist who studied something for many years, they do get some kind of, they get a pass, you know, to the first level of believability, I think. So.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I think some of the challenge, too, is that the science on climate change is not, it's not easy and it's not sort of digestible in quick ways to understand. And it revolves around ice cores and, you know, Keeling curve and Mauna Loa data on carbon dioxide. And so some of the challenge, too, is how to communicate it in a way that sticks with people and people are interested in. And you know,
and it's a tough job. I mean, it's a it's not popularizing it, but communicating science effectively and accurately is much harder than you would think. I agree completely. Well, look, Mariah, we got to put it down there. What we'll do is we'll put up links to some of the things we talked about at the blog. The blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. And, of course, you can find the links to the show on Facebook at @massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.